Hey, Sharon, can I turn to you now? Is there anything that you'd want to add to that idea about the third way?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd want to say I agree with everything Ruth said, and I think she's really captured the essence of third way politics beautifully, and also the different takes on the third way. But there's perhaps one thing I'd want to add, which is one of the ways in which I think the third way does very much represent a continuation of new right politics, which is in relation to the state's role in the provision of welfare. Under the new right, we often heard talk about there being a move towards a mixed economy of welfare. Now, as we all know, there's always been a mixed economy of welfare. Even under the Beveridgian welfare state, you had a situation where, although the dominant image was of the state providing welfare, a lot of welfare was also provided by other sectors, particularly in the home, which often went unrecognised. And also there was a small private sector. But under the new right, you got this shift towards a greater role for the private sector in the provision of welfare. And my feeling is that within third way politics, that shift is being intensified. So although it's being couched in the language of partnership with the private sector, in a way that seems to me to be another way of constructing privatisation, so that we're carrying on getting a shift in the balance of the mixed economy towards a greater role for the private sector through such developments as PFI and other public-private partnerships.
I think that's very helpful, particularly in the context of Book Four's concern with the settlements around welfare, particularly for questions about the welfare mix and that strand of continuity. Let's look a little more closely about how New Labour has approached questions of welfare reform.
Our new society that we want to create will have the same values as it ever did. Fighting poverty and unemployment, securing justice and opportunity. It should be a compassionate society. It must be a compassionate society. But it is compassion with a hard edge. Because a strong society can't be built, not in the real world, on soft choices. It means fundamental reform of our welfare state, of the very deal between citizen and society. It means getting money out of social failure and breakdown, into schools, into hospitals, where we want to see it. This new welfare state must encourage work, not dependency. We are giving young people and the long-term unemployed the opportunity. A £3.5 billion investment programme. We are adding today the option of self-employment as part of the New Deal. But I think it right and fair that they have to take one of the options on offer. We want single mothers with school-aged children at least to visit a job centre. Not just stay at home waiting for the benefit check every week until the children are 16. We need a modern welfare that means a better balance between public and private money. There's no other way to do it. We need to invest more as a country in savings and pensions. We all know that. We'd all agree with it. But government's role from now on is going to be to organise provision, like the new stakeholder pensions, not funded all through ever higher taxes. And our number one priority is to get help to the poorest pensioners first. Housing benefit in some areas. It's virtually designed for fraud. It's true. It has to change. So we can't be that beacon to the world in the year 2005 with a welfare state built for the very different world of 1945.
So, Ruth, what would you draw out as the central thread of New Labour's approach to welfare reform?
Well, I think work, not dependency, sums it up. They're constantly saying New Labour is reforming welfare around the work ethic, and it's a central thread of their welfare reforms is getting people into paid work. And this is counterposed to so-called welfare dependency. They've taken on, really, the new right notion of a dependency culture, although we do not have research evidence to support the view that there is such a thing. And paid work is the best form of welfare, they say. And the theme is work for those who can, security for those who cannot. However, I think it's fair to say that so far a lot more energy has gone into the work for those who can side of the equation, not necessarily in providing work, but in making workless people more employable and encouraging them to take the work opportunities available. More energy has gone into that than into the security for those who cannot work.
How do they understand that phrase, those who cannot work? What do they mean by that?
Well, so far, when we talk about work, I think we have to make clear we're talking about paid work. And I think this is one of the key issues and one of the criticisms that other forms of work, such as care work, is not seen as work to be rewarded in the same way. Nevertheless, it is accepted that, say, lone parents aren't required to take paid work. They will in future be required to go for an interview, but they are still, in a sense, allowed to spend time at home caring for their children. Those who cannot work, I think, are primarily seen as those who are too old to work, i.e. pensioners, those who are so severely disabled that they cannot be expected to work, but there is a new deal for disabled people, so it's not sort of writing off all disabled people as not expected to work, and children. And those are the three groups for whom, in fact, there have been some improvements in benefits. But those, in a sense, have been provided almost against the ideology because they're very resistant to any idea about better benefits. Better benefits means welfare dependency. That's not what New Labour is about.
That's a very strong thing. Sharon, if this approach is about enabling people to enter paid work, how does New Labour understand the role of government in that process?
Well, I think this concept of the enabling state is quite important for the current government. What it means is that there's no longer a commitment to the state having a role to actually create jobs through public works or macroeconomic policies aimed at encouraging full employment. There's a shift towards the state being an investor in human capital. So the idea is that the state provides the opportunities for people to take the jobs that are supposed to be available by equipping them with the skills and the training. And this is done both through education policies and the welfare to work scheme. But again, that leaves the question, what about those who don't take advantage of the so-called opportunities? What happens to them under all of this?
I mean, it does seem to me that in that stress on people being responsible for their own lives, for their own well-being, for their own welfare, and that then in the context of the state enabling them to do it, there is an issue about how we view people who fail to take advantage of those responsibilities. I mean, is there a degree of moral pressure in the New Labour approach to this? Ruth?
Yeah, I think there's moral pressure, and there's more than that. I mean, the New Deal for young people, right from the outset, made very clear that, you know, government is providing new opportunities, therefore they are to take up and exercise these responsibilities, and there is no fifth option, i.e. young people are not to stay at home, stay in bed, they will lose their benefit. And gradually they are tightening up the rules around benefit receipt, particularly for young people. And the penalties associated with not taking up your responsibilities are becoming more draconian. So it's not just moral pressure, it's the full force of the state in a way.
So we may in fact end up with a situation in which issues about responsibility and obligation are enforced perhaps more strongly than New Right governments ever envisaged doing.
Yes, that's true, though I suspect if had the New Right government come back into power, they'd have been going down, perhaps even further down that road.
Can I just add one thing here, which is I think that it's important to realise that this emphasis on responsibility isn't just in relation to work, but it's in relation to all other sectors of welfare. Mm. So, for instance, in health, we're all being encouraged to be healthier citizens and to take responsibility for our own health, to have healthier lifestyles, healthier diets. In education, parents are being almost coerced into taking responsibility for their children's learning through signing homeschool contracts, through the government saying exactly how many hours of homework children have to do, and parents having to take responsibility to ensure that children do that. And in the sphere of crime as well, with neighbourhood watch schemes, the idea that it is our responsibility to protect ourselves from being victims of crime.
So as the state moves back into enforcing us being responsible and meeting our obligations, we become more responsible, more active citizens, in theory at least, across the whole range of welfare activities. I mean, that's clearly one of the big strands, but there's also surely a big stress on organisational reform in relation to the welfare state, with ideas about modernising public services and welfare systems to fit new challenges. What would you pull out as the central themes there, Ruth?
I think one of the interesting constructs in the welfare reform green paper was the notion of the sceptical, demanding citizen consumer. But I think in this, the consumer is stronger than the citizen. And it is, I think, again, following the major government, a kind of consumerist approach to users of the welfare state. I think that the whole listening to users is stronger in the service area. It is still not applied at all, really, to the benefit side. And I think that reflects this notion that if you're on benefit, you don't kind of deserve, in the same way that service users do, to have some kind of say in how things are managed. I think the other big theme is particularly on the social security welfare side, is this individualised approach to treat people as individuals, to have personal advisers who will tell them what's available. It's very much, I think, comes from the United States, where they've taken the same approach in their welfare to work schemes. And this is seen as the kind of the modern approach to provision of benefits.